Alcohol Tipping Point is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard. This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications experts and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs, as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com/Boise or call 208-IMPRINT. That's 208-467-7468. Welcome to Alcohol Tipping Point. I am your host, Debbie Mazner, and today we have someone from Canada, Miss Sarah Kate. And she is the founder of Some Good Clean Fun, as well as Rethinking Drinking. So welcome, Sarah Kate.
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm so grateful to have been asked to be on the show. So thank you for that.
Well, thanks for coming. So I got to ask, is your name two first names, or you just go by Sarah Kate? Like, tell me about that.
This is funny. I have my last name is my married last name is very complicated, and I have found over the past 20 years that people can't say it. So when I pivoted into this world, I decided to just make it easy for people to understand who I am and say my name. So Sarah Catherine's my middle name, so I shortened it to Kate, and I just go by Sarah Kate. And you can call me Sarah, or you can call me Sarah Kate. I'll answer to both.
Okay, that helps me. We always get thrown off by two first names. We're like, is that?
I know.
Well, good. And then you're calling from Canada. Where in Canada did you say you're from?
So I live in sunny Toronto, Ontario. It's sunny right now anyway, but we're heading into fall. It's nice and crisp here. Toronto is has been my home for about 25 years. And prior to that, I just lived in I grew up kind of in a smaller town in southwestern Ontario.
Okay. So Canada, true and true. Awesome.
Yeah. All right. But I did spend my summers in Cleveland, so I consider myself, part of me, a fraction of me, my heart will always be in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's America for sure. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Well, great. Well, tell me a little bit about yourself and what your experience was like with alcohol.
So growing up, my parents were really strict, not like super religious strict, just they were strict in our with our health and our habits and things like that. So my parents weren't big drinkers at all. I don't think I saw my parents drinking at all really until much, much later in my teens, early 20s. I found, and this is, much later on, I discovered that my grandfather, my mother's father, had passed away from alcohol abuse actually. But I didn't know this at the time when I was growing up. It was sort of kept hush hush. So when I got to high school, you want to drink a little bit with your friends and, I wasn't like a huge party animal. It was like, I just wanted to get into trouble a little bit. I wanted to push the boundaries. I didn't want to follow the rules, kind of like a typical teenager, but didn't really drink too much. I had one incident where, I got into a bit of trouble, drank too much. My friends had to drive me home, but that was when I was 17 or 18. So like already towards the end of high school. So when I got to university, it was like, oh wow, I can drink as much as I want. And like within the first week of university had like borderline alcohol poisoning. So I think, where things kind of shifted for me was, everybody drinks in university. It's a very boozy culture. My university was more of an artsy university in general, like general sciences sort of university. So there were lots of different types of people on campus, different pubs, and it was always exciting on pub nights to go out drinking. And so, I did the usual university drinking, but it wasn't until out of university where I started having this feeling that, like, it was never enough. It was never enough. I wanted to keep partying, keep drinking, even if it was 3 o'clock in the morning. It was really hard to turn me off once I started drinking. And I loved it. My favorite thing to do was, like, go out and drink my face off throughout my 20s. And then when I got into motherhood, there was lots of periods there where I didn't drink at all because I was pregnant, nursing. But, my first child, pump and dump, never came into consideration for the first few months. You know, it's your first child and, you're fragile. The baby's fragile. Your husband's fragile. Nobody's thinking about drinking at all until, much later on down the road. But by the time my second came around, it was like pump and dump immediately. Like, when can I have a glass of wine? Coming home from the hospital, my husband had a glass of wine, a huge glass of white wine on the table for me. Like, congratulations, you've had a baby. Let's drink. And that was sort of the beginning of the end, I think, for me was, from when my son was born 9 years ago until about 2 years ago, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. I was a victim of the mommy wine culture for sure. Mm-hmm. The permissiveness to drink, the play dates with alcohol, the farmer's market sippy cups, the couple get togethers with the kids. And, one of my big concepts, and we can get to this later, is that women don't talk about alcohol abuse. We've been encouraged to drink. And so nobody was ever going to say to me, like, you've had too much. Like, you really, that's not healthy for you. You've had 5 glasses of wine. Like, my friends were keeping up with me, many of them, not all of them. But where it differed, though, from myself and my friends is that I would go home and want to have more. And they could easily go to bed and turn off the tap. But I would go come home from the barbecues or the play dates and want to continue having drinks. And, I had that sort of moment where I woke up and I was like, I don't like myself anymore. This is not what I wanted my life to be like.
Yeah. So, I mean, pretty typical story of a lot of women, like going to university, big party culture, and then motherhood, having alcohol being so readily accepted and advertised by ourselves.
Yes.
Yeah, just like a huge shift. I definitely experienced it. I think it's worse. Just talking to other mothers of other generations, like, it's definitely been more marketed towards women. As far as, like, wine goes and drinking in general, like, I think you had something on your website too. Like, why did women start drinking like cowboys? Was that?
Yes. When did women start drinking like cowboys? And what the thinking behind that is that our parents' generation, our mother's generations, people will make an argument and say, like, moms in the 80s were taking pills. Moms in the 60s were taking pills. That's a small fraction. I'm sure that was a smaller, much smaller fraction of the population than of women than women that drink now. But somewhere along the line, we started being proud of how much we could drink. We started like cups in the air, ladies, wine glasses in the air, drink all you can, like bottomless mimosas. When did this start? And this is just my own opinion. This is not based in, sociological research or, anything like that. But I really feel like, thinking back in my life, the tipping point for culture was Sex and the City. And it's funny because they're talking about the reboot now. Everybody's, really talking about, like, SJP in New York City and what's she going to drink? What restaurants are they going to go to? And, I'm not blaming them necessarily, but I think this idea of women getting together with each other and drinking, and that empowering feeling of, like, ladies out on the town with their own income. The work-life balance thing shifted. Women were in the workplace. Like, as you look at the trajectory of women, wanting to shatter the glass ceiling in the workplace and expected to play along with the boys and manage, household tasks, the trajectory of more and more women breaking the glass ceiling kind of goes along with how much more we've been drinking. So there's this interesting shift in culture of, you know, girlfriends, that girlfriend narrative. You know, I don't ever remember my mom saying like, me and my girlfriends are going out on the town tonight. Right.
Oh yeah. I can't even imagine.
Yeah. Like my mom had book club and like, I mean, she had friends, but they didn't go out to bars and drink like cowboys and at all. And I'd say that I think it's more common now for women of all ages to, you know, and that's not related to drinking necessarily, but this empowerment of like being able to go out at night and have fun. It just because you have kids doesn't mean you can't have fun. And that often goes hand in hand with drinking. And I, you know, if you look back to pre-Sex in the City, you know, Cosmos weren't a thing. And then it became this de rigueur to go out and get Cosmos and with your girlfriends. You know, so there's that, and then there's the piece of like more and more women breaking the glass ceiling and having to play in the big boys sandbox, in a very male dominated business world, and the drinking that happens in the male circles. So that's just sort of my theory behind all of this, is that we've been really encouraged, and we've also been encouraging each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so interesting. So then you mentioned you got to the tipping point. What happened? What shifted and how did you change your relationship with alcohol?
Yeah, this was really interesting. And I'm going to say that I'm still working on my relationship with alcohol. Mm-hmm. By not drinking. I'm, you know, taking the time, and I've discovered so much stuff even in the last couple of weeks. But what happened really was I couldn't stop. Like I went to a Christmas party and I overdrank, and I walked out of my friend's house. I don't blackout. I wasn't a blackout drunk. But this was one time where I somewhat blacked out because I don't remember a lot of the night. And my friend said I walked out of the house and was totally normal. She's like, I would have no idea that you had drank. I said, I think I had five or six vodkas plus wine, plus like whatever special holiday cocktail you had on the table. Like she did not even realize, but I remember, I do remember waking up on the bathroom floor, and my husband was just furious. He's like, you know, why do you keep doing this to yourself? And the kids are going to see you. And I was humiliated, embarrassed, ashamed, you know, like it was an open bar Christmas party. Like, why couldn't I control myself? And that was the moment, I think, where I was like, okay, I don't like this anymore. I don't like myself anymore. And that Christmas, you know, I made a real note of how I was feeling. And it was 2 o'clock in the morning when I was wrapping presents on Christmas Eve, wondering why it was taking me so long. Well, gee, I wonder, I've had a whole bottle of wine, you know, like, so there's, I started paying attention to it and wanting to moderate. And when I realized I couldn't moderate, I knew that there was something more to this. And I started reading books on, you know, what's wrong with me, you know, and it's the usual story of you don't want to Google, or you're Googling, am I an alcoholic, but you don't want to tell anybody you're struggling because there's a stigma against anybody who, you know, isn't normal and can't handle their alcohol. So the tipping point was that kind of that holiday season where I was like, I'm disgusting. I hate myself. What am I doing? My life is falling apart. And I'm not able to enjoy life anymore. So, you know, from there I started researching, and I read This Naked Mind and Quit Like a Woman, which seemed to be like the two, you know, they're the two Bibles, mm-hmm. I think, for women who are quitting drinking. And it took me, this is another sort of longer piece, but you know, it did take me from like April 2020, like right at the beginning of the pandemic, was I had decided to do a 30-day alcohol-free challenge with Annie Grace. Mm-hmm. And I did it. And then for the next, up until Christmas, I was sort of what I call rethinking drinking. And so if anybody listening is following Chrissy Teigen's story, you know, she's experiencing the same thing. She quit for a really long time, had a couple of like wine slip ups. She said wine hiccups, she says, along the way. And she's been 50 days sober now. And it should have been, she said it should have been a year, but she's realizing that alcohol is just not serving her, that she doesn't feel good. She feels sick when she wakes up in the morning, like she's missing out on life. And that's sort of what I was going through. I was like, really did not want to drink anymore, and had all the information. And it really, I'd say there were a couple of slip ups, nothing too serious, you know, going away to a resort. I had a couple of drinks and didn't have any like major episodes. But what really happened, the final moment, was when my daughter looked at me at Christmas Eve dinner, or sorry, Christmas Day dinner, and I wanted a glass of wine. I kept telling myself, I can't have Christmas dinner without, I'd gone without eggnog, I'd gone without, you know, all the holiday party drinks and stuff. And it was COVID, so it was, there were no parties to speak of, but I had, so I'd been pretty good in December. And I said, you know, I deserve one glass of wine. And my daughter looked at me, and she was 12 at the time, now 13, and she said, Mom, I'm really disappointed in you. You have been, like, you promised, and you've been working really hard, and I'm really disappointed in you. And I just, that broke me. That broke me because I was like, I have showed her that I can't commit, that I can't commit to, you know, what I have promised to myself. And so that was the last drink I ever had. That was last Christmas. So I'd say, like, truly, I haven't had anything to drink since December 2020, but it was really April 2020, where I was like, that's it, I'm done. And I've read all the books and I'm doing this challenge April 6th. And I'm really, really proud of the journey and how far I've come.
Yeah. And I think it's so great to point out that it's not linear. You don't have to be perfect. It takes practice. And sometimes you do have hiccups, but it doesn't mean you're not learning anything along the way. You don't have to completely start over. It takes a while to really get there to where you're like, yeah, I'm done. Like, I'm done.
Yeah. And this is sort of why I keep the concept of Some Good Clean Fun, like the basis, the values that are supporting the Some Good Clean Fun website and publication, is this idea of rethinking drinking, that you don't have to be sober to want to read the material. You can still be drinking. It's about rethinking our relationship as a society and as a person. So for instance, today's article, it's back to school. Everybody's really moms are starting to get stressed. And so we had a little piece yesterday on, like, what are five things you can do instead of grabbing a glass of wine, you know, in that moment at 5:30 when things are melting down in the kitchen. And then today's article is really debunking the myth of, like, does alcohol actually relieve stress? And, you know, we know scientifically that you might have a few minutes of relaxation, but then the stress reaction in your body actually increases anxiety and increases stress in your body. What I'm trying to do is on a singular level, what can you do right now in your kitchen when you want to have a glass of wine? You cannot go and lie down and take a nap. At 5:30 when your kids are hungry, your family's hungry, your boss is still on the phone, like you you just can't. So what are the things you can do in the moment? That's on a singular level. And then on a societal level, let's debunk all these myths that people are talking, like, yeah, absolutely, alcohol relaxes us. Well, it actually long-term makes you less resilient than it would if you had some LaCroix, just regular plain H2O, your resilience actually increases.
Yeah, there's so many myths around drinking and alcohol. So this is a good segue for people that aren't familiar. You started Some Good Clean Fun and Rethinking Drinking. So explain a little bit about what those are.
Yeah, so Some Good Clean Fun is an online public lifestyle publication celebrating sort of an alcohol-free lifestyle. We have three sort of areas that we like to talk about. So one is alcohol-free drinks. So this was a big, big strategy for me, was getting an alcohol-free drink in my hand, something that I enjoyed, something that was elevated, something that made me feel grown up. And so I'm trying to translate that through Some Good Clean Fun and provide some of those options for people who are, you know, rethinking drinking and looking for, they want that glass of red wine. And so what do they swap out in their hand? Something that is alcohol free. The other two areas we kind of cover are, I really, really want to celebrate other women who are doing the same thing, who are saying, I'm rethinking this. It's not linear. I'm on a journey. You know, a lot of the people we've profiled admit to, you know, I'm sober. But it doesn't, you don't have to be sober for us to sort of profile you, but because there are so many women right now who are rethinking their relationship with alcohol. And I really wanted a place to celebrate average woman who has found the courage, the rebellious courage to say, I'm done. I don't feel good. I don't care what society is telling me. I want to rethink my relationship with alcohol. And that is so key for us. Like, we want to make sure we're profiling these women. And then the third piece is, you know, we just want to provide a little bit of touching lightly on the education piece. So the debunking the stress and alcohol myth, for instance, and in an easy to read format. We're not doctors. So it's myself and a writer and, you know, we have guest writers and, you know, so there's a team of two working religiously on providing this content. And there's, you know, guest writers and people who provide recipes for us sometimes. And we launched in April. And it's been unbelievable. I'm so excited by the traffic we're getting to the site and people joining the newsletter, because it's not about me. This is not self-serving. I'm excited that the conversation is happening. People are interested in rethinking their relationship with alcohol. That was the goal of this, was to provide a place where people could turn to with no stigma, and, you know, an inclusive space to have that conversation.
And I think it's so important because women kind of generally gravitate a bit towards the health and wellness realm and maybe really, you know, like maybe trying vegetarianism or yoga or taking care of our health. But alcohol gets ignored. Like, it gets its own whole category. But you're bringing it into like, oh, this is about wellness. This is about health.
Yes, it is about health and wellness for all women. And this is something that I keep articulating to people who are asking me, like, is this a sober website? No, this is, sure, you can be sober, absolutely. But this is the concept of rethinking drinking is applicable to all women in the sense that it's not going to hurt you to drink less. It's not going to hurt you to, you know, choose to have an alcohol-free drink. Try it out. It's kind of like, you know, my husband, you know, loves meat, right? So every once in a while I'm like, you know, maybe we should not have steak this week. Like, maybe we should try having some beans. Let's try and have a vegetarian chili, get some good fibers in our systems. And it's not going to harm him. He's going to feel better probably for having beans instead of red meat in the long term, right? And so I feel like rethinking on a personal level, just like you said, like women do like vegetarianism and to try being a vegan for a little while, and they try out yoga. And yeah, why are they ignoring alcohol? Well, here's a good place to start. Let's try and create that a wider awareness of, build this into your preventative health program.
Yeah, so important. And how did you end up, do you have a background in journalism? Do you, like, how did you decide to make this?
So interesting. This is now very personal. It's worth explaining. So I was working in marketing communications for a long time. I grew up in the PR industry and in Canada, and then switched over to marketing and, just had a couple of really terrible jobs that made me miserable. And, so I started my own marketing communications agency thinking that this was where, you know, this was how I was gonna, can work for the rest of my life. Like, I wanted to start my own business. Through this process though, of rethinking drinking and finding myself, I realized that, you know, when I was 17 and this is crazy because I'm 44. So why am I bringing up the past? But what I've realized is when I was 17, 18, I knew where I wanted to go. I wanted to be a storyteller. I should have either been a journalist or a speaker or an actress or something, you know, involved with storytelling. And I had moved further and further and further and further away from doing that as a person. So when I started down the road of rethinking drinking, a lot of it was, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? Running an agency, I'm miserable. It's not what I was meant to do. And I truly believe that my purpose on this planet is to inspire and to tell stories and to, I'm a great writer. You know, and it all kind of came together into like, I wanted to share with the world what I have discovered. I had a burning desire to telling everybody I knew, everybody I spoke to in those first couple of months, I was telling about this naked mind. And, you know, most of them are rolling their eyes and like, okay, great, Sarah. Thanks very much. So I'm like, there are people out there who want to hear this and I'm going to tell them. Yeah. So that's sort of how that came about. So this is now my, you know, I'm doing this full time. And I don't know where it's going to lead to. I really do. I'd love to be able to write a book one day, sort of a cross between like a recipe book and, you know, a sort of an inspirational, not so much my story, but, you know, kind of building off of what we're doing with some good, clean fun.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I think too, like when you allow yourself to be sober, I mean, think about how much time when you're drinking that you're not thinking about anything. Mm-hmm. Like you're so That's numbed right. out. And so when you have this clarity and this thinking time that your brain is on, because we turn our brains off. And so you have all this time to really figure that out, like what you want to do. You just get deeper and deeper into yourself and then into the bigger picture of the world. And the projects that you do, the creativity that comes out of just this huge focus. I mean, it's just amazing. It's like a super pill for your brain. I just feel
100%. Yeah. And I read somewhere that there's this, and I should find this and maybe cite it somewhere or send it to if I can find it, because I don't remember where I saw it, but they've done a study that actually shows that people who have overcome addiction are stronger, who have had an addiction and overcome it and are sober, actually have a stronger, more powerful brain, are more resilient, more courageous, and more creative. Like they can measure, there are measurable differences between people who have had an addiction and overcome it and people who have never had an addiction and are just, you know, coping with life as is.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it. I feel it.
Yeah.
That sounds really cocky. But I feel
yeah, creative. And I feel sometimes like, I don't know if you ever feel this, but like you want to shake people and say like, do you understand how incredible this is? Like, you don't need to take prebiotics. I mean, you do need to take prebiotics, but like prebiotics are not going to solve your problem, your stress problems.
Yeah, it's crazy. But also like thinking about some of the real thought leaders that are sober now, like Brené Brown, Glennon Doyle. It's like they've overcome that and they become better thinkers and bigger thinkers. Anyway,
I agree actually. And I always think about that Glennon and Brené, like both of them, you know, overcame in their 20s too. Both of them overcame mm-hmm. their addictions in their 20s. And I just think like, wow, imagine if all the women in their 20s who are, you know, I think it's worse. And this is another conversation, but I do think that women in their 20s, the drinking is a lot worse than it was when I was in my 20s, like 20 years ago. It's like exponentially worse now. Imagine if they all just put down their drinks and said, you know what, I'm going to give it a shot and try not to drink. And imagine what the world would be like. Imagine we'd have like millions of women like Glennon and Brené running around, changing things, making change.
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating when you think about that part of it, and how you mentioned like your dream was to be a storyteller and you kind of got sidetracked and you know, that was that affected by your drinking?
Yeah, it was 100%. Part of it, not all of it. Some of it was like just self-confidence and, you know, being a 19-year-old and uncertain of the world. Really what happened is I had wanted to go to drama school, but at the same time I was learning how to edit and videotape things. So the video, like this was just at a time when video cameras were becoming more accessible. And so even though I wanted to go to theater school, I still had this like, you know, I really like editing and taking and videographing and telling stories that way. And so a drama teacher of mine said, you know, you're never going to get into theater school at Ryerson. Don't bother. Like it's, you know, only the top 100 people or 50 people get in. And so I didn't even try. I basically just said, fine, I'll go to film school. And, you know, after film school, then it was the unconfidence of, that's when I met my now husband. And, you know, yes, started partying, started drinking, being less clear and having less time and purpose because I was in my 20s and drinking so much. So, you know, that it was 100%. I could have done so much more in my life, I think. And I'm not crying over spilt milk. Who knows? Anything could have happened. I could have gone to theater school and been a flop and ended up at film school anyway. Right? Who knows? But I think you're right. It all touches together.
Yeah, I also feel comfort in, like, I mean, because it happened the way it did, that can mean that was the way it was supposed to happen. That's how the universe works. Yeah. And that's what brought you. Yeah, that's what brought you here.
Today, yeah. And it also, like, gave me something to, you know, it gives me a reflection on what were the things that I was excited about throughout my, like, now that I can kind of think clearly and I'm not, you know, drinking away my sorrows or my frustration or my stress, what were the things that I've done over the past 20, 25 years that I really enjoy, and how can I bring all those things together? And it's still the same. Luckily, it's the same narrative, the same in my head, that these are the great things that I enjoy. And they're all this, it's continued throughout my life. And so you're right. Everything happens for a reason. Drinking didn't help, though. It only served to delay getting to where I am today. And I'm happy where I am now, though.
Well, what would be your top tips for anyone that is looking to change their relationship with alcohol?
So here is my interesting thing. So I've listened to, you know, dozens of podcasts and read all the books and heard all the tips and read all the articles, and a lot of them are the same things. And so I'm sure that many guests on your show have, I know many guests on your show have said, you know, said similar things. But I've discovered something that was really important to me that I thought everybody did, but they really may not, what I started doing every morning was, instead of writing I'm grateful for, writing a gratitude list of here are the things I'm grateful for, I would do that, but I would write it as if it had already happened. So I would say, I'm happy and grateful that I have a healthy relationship with my children, a loving and healthy relationship with my children. The first thing was, I'm happy and grateful now that I don't need alcohol to make me happy. I'm happy and grateful now that alcohol doesn't control my life. I have a loving relationship with my children. I'm rich in friendships. I have a, you know, positive relationship with my husband. I own my own business. So I write what I was writing what I was grateful for, but as in future tense, as if it had already happened. And then later in the day, when I would feel like I wanted to have a drink, I was connected back to that moment in the morning when I had declared what my goals are for the day. And it helped me be clear on what I was aiming for, that when I wrote that down, that I am so happy and grateful now that alcohol doesn't control my life. You can go right back to that and say, alcohol's controlling me right now. I'm reaching for this glass of wine because I'm letting alcohol control me. I don't need that. I'm so happy and grateful that it doesn't control me. And that really, really worked for me. It was making sure every day I had a picture and a vision of where I was going. When I slacked on doing that was when I had my speed bumps in my sort of 8 months of rethinking drinking until I finally said, no, I'm done. I still do that, but it's much different now. Now it's like I'm writing bigger goals. Like, you know, I want to be on a stage and speak. I want to have 1 million visitors to the website. I want to share this message with the world. So they're different now, but I started small. I mean, I still have things like, I want to have a loving relationship with my children, and I do have that, which is great, but it changes as you go through your process. But that's the main tip. There's lots of other things that, you know, that people can do: drink water, get a massage, have somebody rub your feet, journal. You know, they're all very similar tips, but for me, that was the thing that really, really worked.
I love that. Yeah, that is just beautiful, and you're manifesting your future.
Yes, it's a manifestation device. And I heard about this from I think the first place I heard about it was Rachel Hollis. Mm-hmm. And she has her Start Today journal, and that's part of it. And so I sort of, you know, I'm not a huge Rachel Hollis fan, or wasn't at the time, but I remembered hearing her talk about that. And I thought, I'm going to try that, because writing what I was grateful for in the moment, I couldn't do it. I was so miserable that I couldn't write what I was grateful for. I couldn't write down, like, I am so grateful for coffee. Cause I was like everyone has coffee. Why am I grateful for that? Like I was so miserable. I couldn't see the joy in having mm-hmm. a cup of coffee on my porch. Right. So I'm like, I'm going to write my dreams. I'm going to write down what I want, because I am miserable and I want to be happy. What's going to make me happy. And then, somebody else, Hina Khan is a coach here in Toronto, and she had, she practices some of these things too. And I had sat in on one of her, free kind of classes, and around that time. And yeah, so it's manifest. And that's where I sort of built on what I had started, was this manifesting, thinking into results is actually a program, a coaching program. It's called Thinking Into Results, but there isn't a better name for this. It truly is. You're thinking into results.
Yeah. That's great. Great stuff. Well, speaking of the future, what are your plans for the future?
You know, I really, my plans for the future are to keep telling the stories of other women who are rethinking drinking, keep sharing information. I really love playing around with alcohol-free drinks and cocktails. Mm-hmm. I don't call them mocktails. I hate that word. Some people love it. I call them zero-proof cocktails, but it's really fun. It's really fun, like trying all the new products. And here in Canada, we don't have access to as many products as in the US, but it's really, the market is growing. And so I'm hoping to be able to provide, you know, even more recipes and content and information to people and write a book. I want to write a book eventually. I think I said earlier, I'd love to be able to write a book and share some of this with a larger audience.
Well, please do write that book. I will read that.
Oh, thank you.
This is really good stuff. So how can someone find you?
So you can find, somegoodcleanfun.com is the website where you can find all the articles. You can find me on Instagram at somegoodcleanfun. And the publication's Instagram account is at rethinkingdrinking. And we also have a Facebook page, which I think is just Some Good Clean Fun. So you can find us there. And that's it. Or you can email us hello@somegoodcleanfun.com.
Well, great. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Sarah. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a delight and a joy. And I hope you have a really great day today and a great weekend. It's Friday. Woo!
Woohoo! It'll be Wednesday for those listening, but enjoy.
Oh dear.
We will enjoy our weekend.
Have a wonderful Wednesday.
It's great. Well, actually, who knows? Who knows when you're listening? It may not even be Wednesday.
It might be Monday.
Cool. Okay. Well, thank you so much. We will be in touch. Like I said, I will post the episode on Wednesday. I'll post about it on social media. Did you have like any pictures or anything you wanted me to use or anything like that?
I'll just send my headshot. I've got a Rethinking Drinking t-shirt on, so it kind of has
message. Oh,
in the picture. Yeah.
I saw I like the Untoxicated shirts.
Oh, yes, I have that. Okay, I don't have a picture of me in that, but I can take one.
You don't have to, but I was that's a cute shirt. I need to get that.
Okay, I'm going to send you one. Email me your address. Ooh. And I'll send you one. That would be, do you have a year? So you can customize the year on it. So are you, like, is it 2020, 2019, 2018? Like, when do you?
Yeah, it was 2020. I wish it was 2019, because it was, like, New Year's. But technically, it was 2020. So we'll say 2020.
Okay. 2020. Okay. That's perfect. So, yeah, so we'll send you. Yeah, send me your address. Don't forget. And I'll send you
T-shirt. That's so cool. Thank you.
Yeah. No problem. Thank you for having me today. This was really great. I love what you're doing. And I love, the community. And just, I love the name of the podcast, too. I really love, Alcohol to Point.
Yeah.
It's so smart.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you. Well, we'll be in touch.
Okay, and I'll share as soon as you share it on social. I'll like reshare it, and we'll probably put up a little post on an article on the website, just pushing people there as well.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, well, have a good weekend, Sarah.
You too. Thank you so much. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye. Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Alcohol Tipping Point. I'm always here for you guys, so please feel free to reach out and talk to me on Instagram at Alcohol Tipping Point, and check out my website, alcoholtippingpoint.com. Again, I hope you can use these tips we talked about for the rest of your week, and until then, see you next time.